Mark.
Hey, Drew.
Do you remember the 70s?
You know I don't, and you know I'm sensitive about it.
Well, I don't have a very good memory of it either, but today I want to talk a little bit about one of my favorite musical artists who has an origin in the 70s, Sir Elton John.
Wow. An origin in the 70s? Like he was born in the 70s? That can't be right.
No, I think professionally he kind of came up in the 70s.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Love it.
Yeah. So specifically, we're going to be talking about Elton John's second pinball machine, as far as I know, that has been kind of themed and named after him. We're going to be talking about the Jersey Jack pinball machine, Elton John, from 2023.
Wow. It must be like a real accomplishment to be so successful and so prolific over such a period of time that not only did you have one pinball machine, but that like aged out. And then somewhere down the line, someone was like, you know what we need? An Elton John pinball machine.
Yeah.
Like if only like a mat there, like you could probably count that on one hand, the number of people that would be that timeless that they could have two pinball machines.
Yeah. I can't think of any other examples off the top of my head, but certainly none with pinball machines almost 50 years apart.
Yeah. You know who actually probably comes close is Elvira, which is kind of interesting because she's got like three or four different pinball machines, I want to say.
Yeah. So I'm maybe not up to date on the Elvira lore, but that's like a character, right?
But also a person. It's the same.
It's the same person.
It's been the same woman as far as I know. Oh. I mean, I think, you know, people dress as Elvira all the time, but sure. As far as I understand, there is one Elvira.
Okay.
I think she's in her, I don't know how old is Elton John, do you know?
Gosh, I think like 80-ish.
And how old do you think Elvira is?
If she's got pinball machines over the course of 50 years, probably also like late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, so Elton ages her out by 5 years. He's 77. She's 72.
Wow.
Also, she's like a reddish brown haired person.
Not in character.
Obviously not in character, but like, yeah, like looking at a picture of Elvira. Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy, man.
Well, we're not here to talk about Elvira today. Maybe in a future episode.
Yes. Sorry to distract us.
Today, we're talking about Elton John Pinball II. And I should go back and say about Sir Elton John, because as you probably know, he is a knight.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you know much about knights and about what that means in our modern society?
In modern society? No, not so much. Although I think there's something like you see OBE, I think, after people's names who have been knighted. But I like that's about the full extent of my knighthood and damehood knowledge.
Yeah. So it turns out there are
Order of the British Empire. Is that what it is?
That's correct. Yeah. There are chivalric orders. And I'm not even saying that right, I think. But it comes from, you know, that sort of tradition of knighthood where the monarch, at least in the British, you know, system,
sure,
can kind of appoint you to one of these chivalric orders, of which there are 10.
What?
There are 10 chivalric orders. We're not going to talk about all of them today.
I would love to, though.
Yeah, I am going to kind of test your knowledge, though, a little bit. You already named one, which is very impressive.
Thank you.
I'm going to give you 5, and I want you to tell me.
Are you going to give me the initialism, like OBE, Order of British Empire? Or am I going to have to? Sorry, go ahead. Just go ahead.
I'm going to give you 6, and I'm going to name them. And I want you to tell me which of these is not a current chivalric order. And it's not a trick question. One of them really isn't.
Okay. So it's like, which of these is not like the others?
Yes.
So 5 of them are, one of them is not.
That is correct.
Okay.
We're going to start, and I'll just spoil this for you. The one that is not was at one point, but is now defunct.
Sure.
And I'm going to give them to you in the order in which they were created. So starting from the most ancient, I guess.
Oh, okay. Can you give me the year in which they were created?
Yeah, if you'd like.
Just for fun. Why not?
All right. So starting in 1687, we have
Post-Magna Carta.
The most ancient and most noble order of the Thistle. And, oh, I don't have a year for this one, but
I'm sorry. It's called the most ancient.
It's called the most ancient and most noble order of the Thistle. I don't know that it was originally called that, but.
Okay.
And then I don't have a year for this one, but it definitely comes in after 1687 and before the next one. The most honorable order of the Bath.
Okay.
The Bath.
Right. Like the Bath Party, probably.
I think so. And then in 1815, the Royal Guelphic Order.
Guelphic?
Guelphic.
That sounds Welsh.
In 1896, the Royal Victorian Order.
Okay.
In 1917, the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire.
Bill and Ted started that one.
That's correct. And then also in 1917, the Order of the Companions of Honor.
Oh, God. Was that six?
That was six.
No. All right. Give them to me one more time, but a little more quickly.
Yeah. So quick recap. Order of the Thistle, Order of the Bath, Guelphic Order, Victorian Order, Order of the British Empire, Order of the Companions of Honor.
I think the one that's defunct, it's because the recent royals are jealous sons of bees. I think the Victorian order is defunct.
So close, so close. It's the Royal Guelphic Order.
God, it was Guelphic. I was no longer. I'm going to tell you, that was guess number two.
Yeah, it only existed for something like 25, 30 years, something like that. And I think it was related to a specific military combat and it's not awarded anymore.
So the modern order, like, is everyone who gets a knighthood or damehood, are they all part of the OBE?
No, that is, in fact, the one that we're most likely to hear, because it's sort of like the general catch-all for people who get to be knighted, usually for contributions to, you know, art,
culture,
or science, or culture, okay, or maybe even politics, I think. But there's also an order that we didn't list that I think you just automatically get into after a certain number of years in, like, British civil service. I think it's like 30 years in a certain kind of class of, like, administrative capacity. And you get knighthood? You're in the chivalric order. I don't know. I think there are, like, different ranks within each order.
So is it the case that, like, you know, all rectangles are, or all squares are rhombuses, but not all rhombuses are squares?
No, just say rhombi. Just say it. I mean, I don't know if it's right, but it feels right.
If this feel right. Rhombosaurus, I think, is actually. Rhombosaurus.
Yeah, I think something like that. I think there are, like, you know, this is about 5 minutes of Wikipedia research that I did before we started talking about this. But I believe there are, like, kind of four ranks, and the top two are the ones that are considered, you know, knight or dame, where you use the title like sir or dame. Yeah. And the others are just sort of like, I don't know, it's like a country club maybe.
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right.
You get to be in it, have a member.
So Elton is OBE.
He is, but that was only his first chivalric order.
Shut up.
He has a second, and it's one of the six, one of the other five.
There is another. Is he part of the most ancient and most historic order of the thistle?
He is not in the order of the thistle. It is, in fact, the order of the Companions of Honor. And I believe that he was given the most excellent order of the British Empire first for his charity work, in fact. So a lot of work about, you know,
the most excellent honor of the British Empire is the OBE.
Yes.
Okay.
And then he was given the Order of the Companions of Honor, I believe, for his contributions to music and the arts. Although it doesn't have to be that those are the reasons for each of those orders. I think you could be a musician in the OBE or
that is whatever. Super cool.
Yeah.
Once again, I can't imagine a lot of people are in that many, like, are in multiple orders.
Yeah, I don't know what the stats are on it, but it turns out a lot more people are in chivalric orders than maybe you would think.
Sure.
And the monarch can kind of induct a new class into all these chivalric orders on 2 days in the year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean,
solstices, maybe?
No, not solstices. It's not nothing so...
like Union Jack Day.
It's the first one is New Year's Day. So it's kind of like,
okay,
you know, New Year, new nights, whatever.
Yeah.
And then give me another guess.
I'm trying to think of other, like, you know, empire holidays.
I'll give you a hint. This one changes.
Oh, Easter.
No, it changes with every monarch because it's the monarch's birthday.
Oh, that's insane. Then that has, like, its own name. Is that Jubilation Day?
I think it's just birth, like the birthday.
The birthday.
Yeah. I'm picturing
Jubilee is what I was thinking of.
Have you seen 30 Rock? Do you know the one where there's, like, this, you know, Austrian prince or whatever that invites them to his birthday?
Yes, very familiar.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, all dear friends, for coming to my birthday.
I don't know. I don't really know much about British culture, so I don't know if that's how the king talks, but probably.
Probably.
Well, so let's get back to Sir Elton John. His connection to pinball actually runs maybe even deeper than you would think, even with two pinball machines over 50 years.
Go on.
Sir Elton John played a role in the film adaptation of the rock opera Tommy.
Really?
Yeah. So Tommy, of course, is the story of the young pinball player who is deaf, dumb, and blind. And it's from the Who song Pinball Wizard. And in fact, there's a character in this rock opera, which I've never seen, but I now have to, I think. There's a character that is the Pinball Wizard. Tommy is not the Pinball Wizard.
In full, like, regalia with the wand and the robe and the stars.
I think not a wand and robe, but this character is played by Elton John. So he
is... Oh, he's in it. See, I also have not seen Tommy.
Neither have I, but I feel like I've got to at this point. Yeah. He's in the movie playing the Pinball Wizard, who's kind of like a villain, you know? Like, he's the one who's, like, really the good pinball player around. And he wears 4.5-foot tall boots.
Is that like a mouth typo? 4.5 feet?
That's what they say. They're just these giant boots, and he's the pinball wizard. And yeah,
at that point, it's just stilts. Just call them stilts.
I think that they had his initials on them too. So they're like, I don't know, in rhinestones or something.
That's
weird. It's phenomenal. So he did that. And then also he covered the song Pinball Wizard, and they used it in the movie.
Really?
Yeah. It's like a piano cover of it.
I bet that's pretty good.
Of course it is, because it's Elton
John. I mean, he doesn't miss. Wow. No, that's very interesting.
So Elton John is, in fact, the pinball wizard.
He is the pinball wizard. And of course, wizard mode in pinball machines is named because of Tommy in the song, not because it's not the other way around, right? Like, as far as I know, wizard mode as a terminology came out after the Who song, and it wasn't the Who referencing pinball.
Yeah. So I think that the connection between Sir Elton John and pinball is very deep and very connected. So
that's interesting. He is basically the reason then that we have these end game wizard modes.
Yeah.
Thanks, Elton.
Maybe the reason we have pinball at all, for all I know.
Get him on the show.
Yeah. So what do you say we go seek out this new Elton John machine and maybe, you know, maybe find an old one too, if we happen to stumble upon it.
Yeah. Let's do it.
All right, we're back. Mark, what do you think?
I mean, I don't want to spoil my review too early, but like, that was awesome. I really, 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 really loved how it felt like. There was the holy light show, Batman. You know what I mean? Like,
oh my gosh,
yeah. What a use of lights, which feels so appropriate for a prolific performer like Elton. And I had such a good time with that one, man.
Yeah, I think this was the most fun I've had playing pinball, like maybe ever, but it's certainly in the last year, like the most fun I've had.
Yeah. Look, I don't want to, you know, dive too far ahead of ourselves here, but like, I sort of shrugged you off when you said maybe we could find an old pinball machine for Elton too. Maybe you knew that going into this venue. Like, I didn't believe you, but like, I was also pleasantly surprised that we found the original Elton John pinball machine.
Yeah.
Captain Fantastic.
And the Brown Dirt Cowboy.
That is what it's called.
The
right?
Full title of the pinball machine is Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy. It came out in 1976, one year after the album of the same name.
I will say it was a mistake that we played the Jersey Jack machine before we discovered that the venue, I'm going to say before I discovered that the venue had that. I feel like you were luring me into a trap. You knew. I got that, not to get again ahead of you, but like, boy, that Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy machine, hot trash.
Yeah, it's... I feel like the Elton John machine may have ruined all pinball machines for me in the future.
Yeah, that's fair.
But especially any Elton John themed pinball machine. So let's just like get that out of the way right now. It's an old game. It's got the kind of the old style of pinball where it kind of bounces around in this arc up top, and then you don't really have a lot of control down below.
I don't think it deserves, like, at some point we will do episodes probably on like that era of pinball machine, but I don't think I'll be coming back to that one anytime soon. So it's probably worth at least calling out that like it's bizarre, man. Like the that old 70s, I guess it has to be 70s Captain Fantastic machine, like the left flipper side really didn't have any like guardrail. You know what I mean? Like it just was like, haha, I think there was like a pin and like a ball could just like insta drain out there. It was like, I'm sure that was some interesting gimmick in the 70s, but like,
Yeah, just overall not fun, and certainly not after the one we're talking about today. So,
oh, yeah.
So let's just dive right into it. I think as a recap for first-time listeners or long-time listeners, we like to approach the pinball machines that we're covering kind of from an amateur angle, but kind of pick apart what really calls out to us in the machines in three specific areas. We like to talk about the theme of the pinball machine and how well the pinball machine kind of incorporates the theme into the design of the game, the cabinet, the music, and so forth. How well does it just kind of draw you in and make you feel like you're in that world or with that character? And then also the game design, which can be the physical layout or, you know, the rule set. Is it approachable? Is it easy to learn? Is it fun? And then I guess, yeah, finally, the last category is just overall fun. You know, when you finish a game, how much do you want to come back and just play it again? So those are the three categories we're gonna review this Elton John machine in and give it scores, you know, out of five stars, I guess, for each of those categories. So I guess let's start with the easy one, the theme. I think you alluded to this at the beginning, but my goodness, the light
show. Oh my gosh.
I think I read there was something like 500 plus individual LEDs that can all kind of turn on and off.
Oh, super cool.
Which must be like a high number, you know.
I would believe that, right? Like, so if we think like there is a big piano that's sort of a big center focus, like in the back of the playfield, and Elton John is sitting at the piano in his like rhinestone baseball outfit, and that piano is decked out with like almost like the New York Times Square, the Times Square ticker, right? Yeah. Like it like weaves in and out of the piano, like following the curves of the piano.
I think that might be like a thing that he does in his shows. I don't know.
Really?
Yeah. I feel like, I guess I don't know. I've seen Elton John once in concert, best concert of my life, but I don't know if he does that now or if he did in the past, but like, it seems like something he would do for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. The piano was,
I mean, that's gotta be, I don't know, like 100 light. It feels like 100 lights right there. Almost. Maybe not that many, but
yeah, I don't know. But
a lot of individual LEDs
all over. And like, there's a cursive kind of like Elton John, I don't know, like signature or just like logo in the middle, yeah, that kind of can light up in order of the letters, which is very delightful. And then just lights everywhere. And they all were awesome.
Yeah. I was taken aback at, like, you know, there are a number of musical artist pinball machines out there. We've played a handful of them. And in some ways they all do a good job of capturing an aesthetic of an artist. But like this really, if I think about Elton John and I think about his performances, they are glitzy. They are very like, you know, glam. They're like, they're a big show of pageantry. And this machine captures that in a way that I have not seen anywhere else. Like I felt like, yes, this is Elton John personified in a machine,
yeah,
and with a pinball.
And like zero complaints on the music, obviously. Like all the bangers were there. Everything was like playing at the right time, you know.
Every song was a bit like, it's cool when you get to select songs. Usually they cut, like they cover some that I feel like are, you know, when we covered Rush, there were like a handful. I'm like, yeah, that's fine. But like every, like I felt like each ball I was about to launch, I was like, I don't know. These are all really good songs.
Yeah, any song.
I should come back to this and play again so I can just listen to another one.
This might be the only way I want to listen to Elton John going forward. Yeah, just
right?
Kidding.
Right.
I'll listen to the music anyway. But man, it was a lot of fun listening to the music while playing. Just a phenomenally fun game.
What about the fact that like across the game modes, like the theming with Elton,
yeah,
you know, like specifically like the ball lock, right?
Well,
like,
yeah, this is probably one of the things that I love the most about this machine. There's a crocodile toy on top of one of the scoops, I think, or it's either a scoop or a ramp that leads to a ball lock, and it is the crocodile lock.
I think what I love about that is, so you were the one to call that out to me when we were playing. Because at first I was like, yeah, I mean, ball lock, crocodile, I get it. And then like you coined it, the crocodile lock, which is, I think, fully the intention.
Definitely.
But what sort of one of the things that I love about the theme is that all of those references and themes are there. But in some ways, like I think another, you know, a lesser designer maybe would say, we call it the crocodile lock mechanism. But in this time, it just is ball lock. Like it's very like, you make that connection.
Yeah.
And I think there's something kind of magical about that.
Yeah. And you bring up a good point. We failed to acknowledge the designer of this machine. It's a Jersey Jack machine designed by Steve Ritchie.
No, but I had conflicting feelings about Steve.
We've played at least one or two Steve Ritchies in the past, and he's maybe the most prolific pinball designer of the 20th century and the early 21st.
The last one we reviewed, I remember being very frustrated at Steve. But this is the totally opposite story for me. This is the beautiful machine.
Yeah.
So sorry. As far as theme goes, did you have any other thoughts you wanted to cover?
Yeah, I think that one of my, I don't know, just lots of little details, like you said, that really capture the essence of an Elton John show. Like, I think one of my favorites was one of the spinners. Do you remember the spinner?
Yes.
It had like a face on it or something. And when
it was a star, I have it written down for design.
Right. The star, because of the two colors, right? Yes. Yeah.
It's almost like one side is like red and the other side is almost like a negative of it. So like when it spins, it gives this sort of, I want to say sort of psychedelic kind of vibe. Like it's just like, it looks
phenomenal. And it's perfectly aligned with the different colors so that it really kind of looks like an animation almost.
Yes.
Like probably the coolest spinner I've ever seen.
Yes. Which is, you know, like, and like it's attention to detail like that I think makes this theme so special. Because how often are you sitting there and thinking that, wow, that spinner's really cool?
I've literally never noticed a spinner before in my life.
I know. And this time, like I recall, you know, during, I think, my first warm-up game, I think you were like, wow, did you see that? Like, look at that spinner. And I was like, what? And like, I had to go out of my way to like look for it, like while I was hitting it. And it like was captivating in that kind of magical way.
Yeah. I enjoyed watching you play almost as much as playing myself, because it's just so much fun to watch.
Such
a pretty game.
100% agree.
Great music. So yeah. Is there anything more on theme you want to talk about before we jump into scores?
No.
Yeah. I think this will come as no surprise, but I give it a 5 and immediately wrote down easiest 5 I've ever assigned to.
Easiest 5 of my life.
Yeah.
5 out of 5 for me as well. This is for me, like, and it's weird to say, I would have thought coming into this, by the way, that I like a musician pinball machine would never crack a perfect score in any of our realms, because like it seems like one of the easiest monetization efforts that things can do. But I think, you know, and I didn't know this until we first talked about it, and you mentioned the pinball element that Elton John is tied to, right? Like going into that and knowing that, going to play the machine probably helps elevate that a little bit too, to know that like there is a tie there that makes sense. There's a theme there that makes sense. But yeah, absolutely just awesome. Perfect. Like a perfect execution on an idea.
Yeah. I think not much more to say about it. Yeah, just one of the best themes I've ever seen.
Agreed.
All right, well, let's jump right into game design then. I guess I'll start us off here. I think the first thing to call out, and I guess this is becoming sort of like a theme on my end, I felt like I appreciated the fact that it was not that complicated of a game. There were not like a lot of really complicated combos or shots that you needed to hit for modes. I felt like the modes were kind of stackable mini modes more than anything, which is like my favorite thing in the design of a rule set, is to have like more but simpler modes.
Yeah. Interestingly, that this is an area where I think you and I disagree a little bit. I felt like, you know, the venue we were at that had this machine, and I don't know if we mentioned when it was released, but this is a fairly new machine in the year 2024. It came out, I think, in 2023.
Sometime. Yeah, like very end of 23.
Yeah. So it hasn't been out very long at the time of this recording. And I found, you know, the place we were at was kind of loud and busy, and I found it actually wasn't super clear like where my objectives were, like what I should be, like where I want to be spending my time strategically. I think, you know, a lot of the shots were very accessible in a way that like, even if I didn't know what I wanted to go for, I would always stumble into something cool, but I didn't feel like it was very clear.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think I might have just been so blinded by my love for the visuals of the machine that I overlooked the fact that I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah, but like at a certain point, you don't care because you're like, okay. Like somehow it feels like you're always progressing something. But the problem that I had is that I didn't know how I was doing that.
So, I mean, just off the top of my head, I remember, you know, there were the two easy locks. There was the crocodile lock and there was the clearly marked kind of like Rocket Man multi-ball lock.
Yep. Big screen, you had to be filling there's a rocket that you're filling with fuel.
With fuel, yeah.
To take off.
And I remember you collect like Elton John's wardrobe. And
that's
I remember
right.
I picked up like some glasses, I think, and some, you know, some of that, those sorts of things. And that's, I guess that's what I mean, is that like, you didn't have to start, you know, the wardrobe mode and then like collect all the wardrobe before you can do anything.
Yeah,
that's okay. What a lot of those modes kind of feel like to me in other games. And in this one, like you can make incremental progress in most of the modes.
Like, yeah, and simultaneously, right? Like, so like I remember you, like I think I was watching you play, and you, when you picked up the glasses, you were also, that same shot is also filling the rocket.
Yeah.
So right, the dual purpose there, I think, is fair. But by that point, I think we were, you know, we do some warm up games and we do some competition games. I think you might have been in a competition, like one of our, like, it counts, you know, three games, when I noticed the rocket fuel. And so like something like that, maybe in a less busy venue, less loud venue, that becomes obvious, but it was hard to intuit. On the other hand, I didn't care, because I was progressing stuff either way, and the shots were landing.
Yeah, that's a big plus for me, is that these shots, especially compared to the last Jersey Jack that we played, Wonka,
yeah,
I feel like these shots just felt right. And that just speaks, I think, to the physical layout of the machine.
Agreed. This is the first, and we've talked about this too. We've played a handful of Jersey Jacks. We've only reviewed two so far in the podcast, Wonka and this one. But this is the first Jersey Jack machine that clicks for me.
Yeah. And boy, did it. Like,
agreed.
It was great. So let's talk a little bit about the physical layout. There are a lot of, I think, unique things about this. I feel like this machine made really good use of like vertical space in a pinball machine in a way that a lot of designs don't. So when I talk about vertical space, I don't mean like back versus front of the playfield. I mean like up off of the playfield versus
elevation.
Down. Elevation. That's actually a great way to put it. Yeah. I really liked there's that kind of wire ramp on the left side that like dropped the ball.
Yep.
And I feel like, yeah, so often it goes through like a little ring to stop it first, or, you know, just lets it down gently onto the playfield. This just felt kind of chaotic, and I really liked it.
Yeah. It's worth calling out, I think, that rail, like it loops up through the back of the playfield, comes back to the center, and it just ends.
Yeah.
It just ends in the center and drops like into the center of the playfield, so that it's almost always coming right to one of your flippers. Mm-hmm. But it is worth mentioning that that's super unique, that like, how often do you see something just end?
Yeah. Usually it'll drop like right into an in lane, so it goes on a flipper, but this just kind of comes inside a little bit, which I thought was cool.
Yeah. Agreed.
And then the coolest shot of the game, I think, is off of the upper right flipper up into the piano area.
Yep.
Where if you get it the power just right, it'll, you know, go into the piano, or you can go kind of past the piano on a different shot. But like, that was probably one of the most satisfying shots for me, and it was fun, and it felt like it could have been a lot harder, but it was just the right level of difficulty.
100% agree. Also, as far as like a design element goes, can we talk about the fact that like, I think any other game, like the central toy, you know, in this case, it's a piano and it has some lights on it and Elton John's sitting at it. Any other game, it's just kind of sitting there and it's like for aesthetic pleasure.
Yeah.
The fact that they found a way to incorporate the piano into the gameplay is insanely cool. The fact that a ball can like, it goes into the back of the piano, right? Like there's like a rail or a ramp or something, right? Like in the shot that you're talking about. But I think a lot of designers and a lot of other games would think about, all right, well, yeah, we'll just put a piano there and like a rail will go around it or something, like to use the piano.
Yeah, clearly so much thought.
A lot of care. Like
every part of this game.
Also, the fact that the Elton John plays, like he plays, like his hands go up and down and he'll like sometimes turn to you while you're playing. And like,
absolutely delightful.
Great, great attention to detail.
Yeah. Yeah, I think one other interesting, I don't know, gameplay design, or this also goes to theming, is there are a couple elements that to me felt a little bit like, I don't know, almost like a callback to the original Elton John machine, or at least that 70s style of game. So
I can think of one thing.
So I'm thinking about kind of in the middle of the play field, there are these drop targets.
Yep.
And that feels very much like an old mechanic for pinball that isn't very common in games. And there's like a grid of lights that you have to light up. And I feel like that kind of drop target grid mechanic is kind of an old style thing. And it didn't feel out of place here. It felt great.
It didn't feel out of place. But I will say, after a while, for the advancement of that, I was a little over it. It was a little meh for me, because there was a number of times, I want to say, you know, I think it's used like when you get the crocodile lock multi-ball. Like, I think it's like you're constantly trying to hit, you're just regularly constantly trying to hit them, right? Because there's a 3x3 grid in front of those drops.
Yeah.
So you're constantly hitting the drop to advance the grid. And then that unlocks whatever the next thing is. And at a certain point, I was just, meh, all right, like I get it, drop targets. But you're right, it's a nice homage to the 70s era one, and that was one of the main progression points.
Yeah, and it didn't, I agree, it's not my favorite thing in the machine, but I liked that it was there as like an homage or callback.
Agreed.
To that era.
Yeah, for sure.
The other one, I guess we'll just point out, this is maybe more in the theme area than the game design, but on some of the pop bumpers, there's like stylized Elton kind of cartoon that I think was featured in the original Captain Fantastic.
Yes, and it was nice, I think, that we played this in some of our this version in our warm-up games, then played Captain Fantastic, then came back down to do our competition games on the Jersey Jack Elton John so that we could appreciate that. It was more, I even think that, as I recall, the full popper design, it's like white with like some like, you know, diamondy, like blue or green or red kind of coloring on it. And like, it almost looked like they stole it. Like they found an old Captain Fantastic machine, just ripped the pop bumpers and put them in there.
Yeah. It's amazing that they're able to, I think, thread kind of a line of making this feel like a classic machine, but also very much like a modern pinball.
It's
machine.
Very clear. A lot of love went into this, I think, because of like the way it honors Elton, but the way it also honors that original pinball machine. So like you can tell that Steve Ritchie and the team had a lot of appreciation for that original design.
Yeah. Yeah. So on game design, it's very good for me. I gave it a 4 out of 5. I think that, yeah, there are maybe some things that could have been a little clearer in terms of the instructions, but the layout I thought was really great. So yeah, I give it a 4 out of 5 on that.
Yeah. I'm a little bit below you, and I like to keep just integer values instead of any halves. It's a high 3 out of 5. And that the problem for me was that while it was nice that I'm advancing things without knowing what's happening, I would like to know what I'm supposed to be doing. And that was not immediately obvious in the limited time we had with the machine. And I felt like the reliance on the center drops for a lot of progressions that I did get was not for me, but there is so much to love about this that like that 3 is borderline of 4.
Yeah. It's interesting. Now that you mention it, I maybe, you know, taking the rose colored glasses off a little bit and seeing maybe some of the flaws in the game. And I'll have to check it the next time I get a chance to play it, because I'll definitely play this machine again.
Yeah, for sure.
And I guess with that, we can lead into the final category of fun. I already said this. It's the most fun I've had playing pinball in a long time.
I absolutely agree. Everything about this made me want to just immediately start another game.
Yeah. And unfortunately we had to kind of share the machine with other people at the place because it was, you know, in
demand.
Yeah. But otherwise I really might have just played this for hours.
This is one of those machines where like suddenly I get it, like I could put a workday level of effort like into it, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It wouldn't feel like work though.
Yeah. And that, like, you know, I think a big part of that too is like, you know, you choose the songs when you start, and it's all bangers.
Yeah.
It is all, and like it's, I mean, find me an Elton John song, I guess, that isn't like a banger, right? But like the song curation is S tier.
Yeah, I like that characterization. That's, you know, no complaints. Another easy 5 out of 5 for me.
Yeah, that is also a 5 out of 5 for me.
Yeah, and I don't know that there's much more to say really, Mark. This is like one of the best pinball machines I've ever played.
Absolutely agreed. I think we should probably talk a little bit about our competition.
Thank you. Yeah, we played a couple games to see what kind of scores we'd get. It turns out that one of my early games was my best score of the day, so that's the one I wrote down.
Yeah.
And I had 43,717,630.
A nice, nice effort. One of my best games came very late in the day. I honestly pretty much lucked, I think, into some big shots, big multi-balls. I ended up at 58,181,635, edging you out on the day.
Yeah, very impressive. I could definitely see myself going back and working on that score in the future though.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'd love to get another crack at this machine, but there's not really one near us. So unfortunately, I think it's going to be a long, long time.